The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Kerero o te motu raro mai kia on the rag. Hei kone upurangi mō ngā mana wahine. Citizens of the nation, welcome back to On the Rag, a podcast for and about the mana of women. Ko Alex Casey aho, joined as always in the spin-off studio by Michelle Acourt.
Kia ora.
And Leonie Hayden.
Tēnā tātou katoa.
How are we doing, guys? August, eh? It's actually well into September now.
It is.
They don't have to know that.
It's only a week into September. It's almost not even September. It's like, it's just the it's the epilogue to August. It's
but
okay.
Also, can we believe it's September?
No.
Like, do they know it's
January,
Christmas time?
January, February, March, April, May, June, July, September.
It is so intense.
It was crazy.
I just can't believe, like, there was a time last year, I remember reading a headline that was like, Judge Judy renewed all the way to 2020. And I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. That's years away. That's not that far.
No, it's just coming now.
So,
the Judge 20s are just around the corner.
Oh, my God.
You're going to have to say, what? I'm going to wear a 20s out. A 20s outfit.
Drop waist dresses don't really work on me.
No, me neither.
Oh, neither. They make my legs look like they're about a centimetre long.
Mm. Yeah. Well, mine are a centimetre long, which is why it looks that way.
Oh. Coming up on this podcast, a French chef gets furious, reality TV gets extremely real, and the climate continues to change despite what misogynists might think. But first, we got to thank our friends at the Women's Bookshop, who are our lovely sponsors who make this podcast possible. If you're in Auckland, check them out on Ponsonby Road or buy your books online, for God's sake.
Why not? Easy.
www.womensbookshop.co.nz. We're doing another giveaway this month. We're giving away My First Words in Māori by the wonderful Stacey Morrison.
Yeah, kia ora Queenie.
Help your tamariki to kōrero Māori with us. With this brilliant First Words book by Stacey Morrison. It's got beautiful illustrations and it's got little flashcards. It looks amazing.
I like it.
So we'll give that away on our Facebook page.
I want
Stacey
it.
Morrison.
It's one of the finest human beings on the planet.
She really
she?
Is.
I saw her once and I just couldn't believe it.
I saw her last night.
Did
she
you?
MC'd an event I went to, which I'm actually going to talk about a little bit later.
Yes, please.
But she just filled a room.
Yeah.
And then she got everyone to like turn to each other and hongi and haridu and say Māori order to each other. And it went from being this kind of stiff formal event to just a room full of friends in under 30 seconds.
Wow.
Because of her charm and charisma.
She exudes warmth and love and kindness.
Yeah.
She's gone out of her way to do nice things for me when I've been doing stuff. And you just, I'm going, why? I don't know why you're giving me all of this love and energy, but I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
That's a good step.
I try and ask other people to answer my te reo questions,
yes.
But it's always Stacey that
yes.
shows up and
really?
Goes, that's fine.
Yeah, that's it.
I'll talk you through it.
That's
what
I'm
this?
Talking about.
What about this?
Yeah.
Like, you're amazing.
Yeah. I keep not wanting to make her the person who has to give me that energy.
Right.
But she offers it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
She's a good one.
She is.
She's a good one. So try and get bloody in the draw to win that book.
Yeah.
It's a cracker. On
get behind
Facebook.
Me.
On yeah. the rag on Facebook. Hey, we won an award.
Hey.
First up on the bulletin.
Why?
You are talking, what are we?
Hottest media product. I'm not even sure what that means,
no,
but
it makes us sound like a bunch of tampons.
It does. It does.
I'm okay with it.
Tampons on fire.
Tampons on fire.
Hot.
Well, you know, the the cayenne pepper.
Yes,
leftover,
on the, know, on the from the cheese on toast. On the,
you know about that.
Say that word. I think it can.
It's not where cayenne pepper goes.
People might be confused. People might get it.
It's where it ends up sometimes.
We've all been there.
It but was we're
a marketing magazine.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not the hugest of prizes. And the whole conceit really is they just nominate every single person and outlet in the media so that you then go, oh, we've been nominated for something, and then you promote.
You talk about them.
Them.
And you,
It didn't work for us, though, because
I'm not ungrateful. I'm not
ungrateful.
I just
think we should take it.
Yeah, okay, we'll say, We won an award.
We
Honest
won
Media
award.
Product.
I think we won an Oscar.
Is it a Grammy or an Emmy? I can never remember which way it goes.
It's an EGOT. So something about that, in the Stop Press article about it, there was a big chunk of it was talking about the On The Rag 24/7 Facebook group, which at the time was humming along great. We did the interview for it quite a while ago before the article went out, and I just wanted to announce that that group has since been archived due to it just got a bit out of control with how many members were on board, and there were some people in there who were not fitting the vibe. And we just kind of realised it was sort of impossible to know who's who. The call was coming from inside the house.
It was. And the time that it was needed for us to moderate it properly, none of us had. Not a single one of the three of us had the time or the mental energy.
And we approached it with the kaupapa of everybody is welcome.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that's a really nice way, and it's very democratic, but all kinds of people ended up in there. And
democracy doesn't work.
No, it's not.
Is what we've realised.
We need a dictatorship or just a better filter or something.
But everyone who found us through listening to us and engaging with what we're about, obviously that's the community that we tried to build, and we did very successfully for a while. And we're very grateful for all the feedback you gave us and the lols and the tears.
Oh, it was great.
It was amazing. But just with the open door policy, it ended up just people who had no idea who we were, what our kaupapa was, just clicking into a feminist group and Going hard.
Going hard.
Having
lots of fights.
There was lots of fights, and we didn't want to be responsible for that.
Exactly.
We love you guys too much.
Yeah, and there's, like, the world is full of fights and full of places where fights can be had, and I just like to have a place where I know fights won't happen, like at my house. Oh, that's not true.
A
couple
optimistic
of vodkas and just let it out. But, yeah, so what happened was that some of the gorgeous people who had been moderating have started a new page, and it's working really well.
It's cool.
It is. And I can't
back
honestly
to the glory days.
These amazing women. The group is now is called Kōrero Wahine. There's been a lot of the users from On The Rag 24/7 have jumped over there. It's chugging along in an amazing way, and I just wanted to thank all of those amazing moderators who stepped up and value the community and what it represents so much that they're still willing to give up their time. We need to give them gifts.
Yes.
Yeah, we should.
And cash.
That wasn't binding. Oh. It was not a contract.
But we should have a gathering for those who are in geographical proximity.
Yes.
Maybe
true.
We should do that.
We should.
Let us give you our love in person.
Yeah. We'll yeah, and it's still a place that when I want to take a break from the way the world is in general, I slip over to that page and go, oh, listen to the calm, reasonable voices here. This is lovely.
Very, very, very glad that that community's kind of moved on in some way, and it's still there. So that's Kōrero Wahine if you would like to join. I believe there is actually quite a thorough entry process as
there
well.
Is.
So you've got to really want it. And I think that's...
There are some tricky questions.
There's no maths. All right. What else should we talk about? Our web series. I think we might have talked a bit about the upcoming. We've got a lot of episodes banked now.
Yes.
So we might have already talked about our abortion episode. Did we talk about you getting a fake abortion on camera?
I don't think we did.
Because that's our latest episode. With the full episodes soon to come, but the mine and Leonie's field stories have already gone online, and yours was particularly brave and amazing, I thought.
Well, I didn't feel particularly brave, but at the same time, the concept behind it was because, as someone who's never accessed abortion care, I literally had no idea what the process involved. So I was like, all right, let's film me going to family planning and arranging to get an abortion, which I did. And I talked to the amazing nurse Rachel, who was really cool, and all the staff we talked to and met at family planning were really cool. And I sat down with the head of family planning, Jackie Edmonds. And then we just went through the steps and sort of drilled down into what the step where you have to get two consulting doctors to sign off on, what that's actually for, why it's there. And of course, but the legislation is going to change soon. So as it is, it's just sort of capturing right now what that process looks like for people trying to access abortion care, step by step.
It's really
exactly
good.
What they
it's a lot of steps.
Do down there when the procedure is done and that sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. There was also, what was the response like?
So, you know me, I don't care about responses because I'm terrified of them. But our producer Amber has been keeping an eye on stuff. And she has said that overwhelmingly on YouTube and on Facebook, the majority of the comments are positive. And the bad comments are being taken care of by our community of people patiently and not so patiently explaining to them why they're wrong or arrogant or have no place having an opinion on this particular subject, which is nice to hear.
Yeah. I've been very encouraged. There's been like a lot of lovely messages because I was sort of bracing for the hellfire. I did get one. Someone messaged us, I did a series of myth-busting questions.
Which was great.
Yeah, Alex's piece was so good.
With Terry Bellamack from All Ends. And it was just a bunch of things that I had actually collected from Facebook. So these were things that people actually thought were real. So I went through, said the myth, and then she busted it. And a man emailed us and said, when are you going to show the other side? And I was like, what other side?
It literally is showing two sides.
Yeah, here's one side and here's the other side. Here's the not true and here's the true.
Third dimension of truth. So that was a bit confusing, but apart from that.
So you could have stopped it. A man messaged me. And we would have known.
We would have just nodded.
Exactly what it was. So, yeah, there was some news regarding abortion law reform in August. The government looks like they're going to be opting for Model C of the three options that were kind of on the table.
Model C with a twist.
Which is, it wasn't the ideal, was it?
No, it was the meh option.
Right.
Yeah.
A was the terrific one, which was just a decision made by a woman in consultation with her doctor.
Yeah.
And then the terrible one was continuing to have two doctors approving your choice, I believe. Is that what it was?
Well, I think it might have just gone down
to... It was the hoop-jumping one.
One. You still had to have a third party approve your choice.
Right. Yeah. And then this is the meh one, which was originally going to be from 20 weeks, but is now from 22.
Up to 22, yeah. So there's no statutory testing. But up to 20 weeks. But 20 weeks is the point in which a lot of people have a scan, which tells them a lot of detail.
Mm.
And that gives them no time to then make that decision.
Yeah.
So that's sort of quite a crucial 2 weeks to not be included in that model.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
And then, so how does the law work? I know that these public submissions open now if you want to edit the bill or make your opinion.
You can just let them
it?
Know what, yeah.
You're
if
pro.
You are like, you know what, the option that you've gone for is ridiculous or it's discriminatory or whatever, and then you can lay that out however you think, however is best for you.
Yes.
And then they may choose to ignore all of the public submissions, but at least they'll know what people think.
And it's a conscience vote rather than a party vote in Parliament, so every MP can make their own choice, which also means that it's really worthwhile contacting your local MP because although it's their conscience vote, they need to be influenced by the feeling in their electorate.
Yes.
And that's what they will say.
We own you.
Yeah. They will say, well, you know, personally I feel blah, blah, but I have heard from my constituents and they think blah, blah. So that's this is me covering my ass. So it's really good to send one of those emails. You can go to the All Rands website and they've got links that take you straight through to members of Parliament and you can pick the one in your area or any others that you want to send them to and let them know how you feel. And just be rest assured that the anti-abortion people will be hard out. That's doing true. That.
Yeah, they will.
Being very vocal.
But I think even when the bill passed its first reading, I think there were a couple of MPs who actually voted against their conscience based on feedback that they'd had from their constituents. So they voted for the bill,
yeah,
even though they themselves had already stated that they were anti-abortion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So it is effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that may be something that people, a lot of people vote in favour of a first reading so the bill stays on the table and then they will change their vote later on. But if they, yeah, so they will say, yes, let's keep discussing this. Let's have the discussion. So I'm voting in favour, but actually ultimately I will vote against it. But,
okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Politics.
Well, and see, the ugliest part of all of this has been Winston Peters, who suddenly turned around and said that he wanted a referendum, which is, this is precisely the kind of political issue, piece of legislation, lawmaking, that should be decided by our elected representatives.
Absolutely.
And not by referendum.
It's very stupid.
Why,
it's like referenda for Māori seats and
why,
councils.
Why did he...
This is Winston playing politics. I think this has actually nothing to do with the issue.
Right.
I think this was Winston flexing his muscles and saying, I am a really powerful member of this government coalition and look how I can fuck you up.
Yeah.
Because Tracy Martin, who is his 2IC, has been one of the people most involved in drafting the legislation, along with Amy Adams from National.
To play on her, you know.
Yeah, totally. Her and Andrew Little, who has been amazing. And so they've been quietly, or not quietly, getting on with the work, and suddenly Winston pops up like a jack-in-the-box.
Chucks her under the bus.
Going, no, I want a referendum. No one had discussed this beforehand. So that was just Winston going, look how powerful I am. And I suspect that the women of New Zealand will not forget that we were used as a political football and a really, really important core issue for us. I will never forgive him. Every now and then, you know, I look at Winston and he says something sensible like, let's make learning to drive part of school curriculum because that's a gateway crime, is driving without a license for vulnerable young people. And you go, well done, Winston. And he says, why don't we teach reading and writing in prisons? And you go, well done, Winston. Oh, looks like I might be voting New Zealand first.
Yeah, what's going on?
Never. But then he comes out with this and I go, oh, I see what your stripes are.
Yeah.
Right.
You are all about you and you just use the women of New Zealand as a political football and fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
get
all.
It, get out of it. Get out of it, Winston.
I feel very sorry for Tracy Martin because he made her look like she wasn't on top of things because he pulled the rug out from underneath her. And she's great. Yeah.
Oh, you're saying powerful man undermining the hard work of women.
Weird, eh? I've never seen that before.
Sounds like a new trend. What do you call that? Another woman we're feeling very, very sorry for this month is JJ Feeney.
Yeah.
The verdict came in from her sexual or indecent assault taxi driver trial. The jury reached 11-1, not guilty.
Yeah.
It's just, and reading the news coverage about it, and again, it's the questions that the defence came up with.
Yeah.
Well, you had been drinking lots. Why were you sitting in the front seat?
Yeah.
The conclusion that they drew, which I find probably the most offensive, is that the whole thing was a ploy to get attention from her ex-husband.
Yeah, I find that disgusting.
That's
like,
shocking.
As we've said many times before, women don't put themselves through the court's process.
No.
For fun or revenge, unless there's something very, very wrong with them. And we don't think that there's something very, very wrong with JJ Feeney. We think that she was trying to get justice for something that was done wrong to her.
Yeah. It's not actually about another man. It's about her.
Yeah.
And there was absolutely no evidence offered that trying to get her ex-husband's attention was part of a pattern. It wasn't. They get on really well. They work together. They see each other on a daily basis. There is no evidence for the claim that she did this to get his attention. Yeah. And I find it appalling that you don't have to in any way, you can make a statement like that, but you don't have to back it up with other patterns of behaviour that suggest this might be true. You can just throw that out there and go, this is what she was doing.
Well, I object.
I object, Your Honour.
And all the comments people saying, oh, just trying to stay relevant and get attention. I'm like, it's JJ Feeney is incredibly famous.
Yeah.
She is still on the radio every single day.
Yeah.
I don't think she's doing this as a PR stunt.
And the idea that she was drunk and therefore didn't know what was... Who's not drunk when they take a taxi home? That's why you take a taxi home. That's the whole thing.
Like, on the as far as the jury goes, I do understand that it's hard to convict someone without any evidence of the thing that has been accused. And I get that, and I appreciate that. And so that's why I'm not, I guess, 100% surprised that this was the verdict. But the comments surrounding it continue to be really shit, really biased. The onus of responsibility is all on her.
Oh, it's me. Sorry. So it's just some meditative chimes.
It's nice. It calmed me down. I was getting quite heat up. That's really good. Yeah, and also it seems like the case was never taken terribly seriously by the police, who took a very long time to issue the warrant to get the security camera footage from the taxi. In fact, they waited so long that it was no longer available. And there was a period of at least a couple of days between the warrant being issued and the warrant being exercised, it would seem, from the news reports. So it wasn't like they took it very seriously and looked for the evidence that was available. So there had been some evidence, and it was not sought after quickly enough.
God damn it!
And then without that, it's just who's telling the truth?
Yeah, it's just a he said, exactly. She said.
And now it's like insinuating that she lied about this whole thing happening, which is
And the idea that anybody puts themselves through this. This, when did this happen? 2017?
2017, October.
So it's 2 years of hell for her.
Just for a bloody laugh.
Just so people notice her.
I went to the block house the other day and I stood in a shower, not on. It was Ethan and Sam's shower. And Dom and JJ were there together.
Yeah.
Talking, and he had her attention
the whole time.
The whole time,
pretty much.
The whole time, Your Honour.
yeah.
It's just
rest your case.
It's an absolute shocker. Shall we share some cool tips to lift the mood?
Oh, good idea.
I like cool tips.
Mine is the one that I stole from you.
For me,
that you offered me. I've been moving house and trying to move animals, which I find very difficult.
Yeah,
and you told me the easiest way to get a cat into a carrier thing. To turn the carrier upright and drop the cat in it.
Yeah.
And then lock it like that and then just gently bring it back down.
Yeah.
Cats and I've been doing it nonstop.
The vertical cat drop.
The vertical cat drop.
This is great.
It's the coolest. It's like I still get scratches sometimes, but it's easier than trying to shove them in horizontally.
Yeah.
Because
then
they just sort of spread out so that they're much bigger than the door. And when they're just sort of dangling from your hands, they can't see that they're being lowered into a box.
Oh,
you can blindfold them as well. Put a hat on.
Oh, I'm glad that worked for you.
It did work. It worked.
Yeah, my
very
cat was particularly difficult when it came to carriers, so it took me quite a few years to develop that technique. I'm pleased that it's working.
Yeah, we'll share it with the world. The drop cat.
It's good. I like it. I don't have very. My only cool tip is aerosol sunscreen when you're alone on holiday.
Oh, it's the only way you can get your back done. I'm gonna put on my list.
Yeah, I still don't think that it's necessarily as good as the sunscreen that you smear with your hands. But you can stand nude, as we know. I've worked out what everybody else knew, that you put your sunscreen on nude and then put your togs on.
That's right.
So you stand in your bathroom and you have to put a bath mat on the floor because it's slippery. the spray goes everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what you want, but not on the floor. And yeah, you can spray your very own back. So my back is not sunburnt, even though for several days of my holiday, I was by myself without anybody to help. The other thing apparently you can do is smear a door with sunscreen and rub yourself against it.
Like a bear or something.
Yeah,
that's more environmentally friendly, though. To
I guess so. Yeah, no aerosol. I don't like the aerosol thing, but it's the only way I could get it on.
There might be like a pump spray version available somewhere.
Yeah, that doesn't spread so well. You still need a hand.
Oh, yeah, that's true, true, true.
But that would be great for squirting on the door and rubbing yourself against it. There you go.
There's got to be an easier way than that.
There's my hot tip.
Really hot tip. What about you, Leonie?
Mine's a very lukewarm tip. But it's been helpful to me. It's a particularly niche tip for people like me who have a lot of different bags in rotation.
Okay.
I don't have a handbag.
Yeah.
I have a variety of totes.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I quite often forget to transfer things that I need from bag to bag.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started just putting everything in a smaller toiletry bag, which for some reason I started calling my pod. And that has all of my things in it at all times, and the only thing I have to transfer from bag to bag is my pod. My bag pod.
Why don't you just carry the pod?
Because it's just like, I'll put it down and I'll forget it. Okay. I need something that goes over my shoulder, you know.
Yes, understood.
So it's got, you know, my tampons for emergencies. I'm using a cup, they're there for an emergency, and my lip balm and my keys and some sanitizer and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a small little package.
That's good.
But it's really transformed me forgetting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is good.
Any tip that I can give myself on how to forget things less makes my life a lot easier.
That's a really great idea. For a while, I tried to do the Marie Kondo, like if you have a little box next to your back door or front door, wherever you go, wherever you leave in the morning, and that's where you offload your wallet, keys, etc. from your bag.
Oh, yeah.
Every morning and every night. Oh. Admins.
Yeah, that's too much.
Also, I have a lot of loose keys. I'm not good.
Why are they loose?
I don't know. They fall off and then I just carry them around loose. I'm just playing
Alex.
Russian roulette every day. Who knows what door I'll open?
I do have keys on my key ring and I don't know what they're for. Yeah. I don't know what they unlock, but I'm too scared to take them off in case one day I go.
I purged myself those a long time ago.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the people who don't believe climate change is real and how a lot of new research is suggesting that it's because they are misogynist.
Oh, really?
This really resonated, didn't it? It makes so much sense. So it's some researchers in Sweden at the Chalmers University of Technology did some academic research into climate denialism and have discovered that there is this really strong link between people who believe that there is no climate change going on, and they're also anti-feminists and far-right numpties. Can I say numpties? And they said that for climate skeptics, it's not the environment that was threatened. It was a certain kind of modern industrial society built and dominated by their form of masculinity. And it presents itself in being horrific about people like Greta Thunberg and dismissing her as young.
Just a kid.
Yeah.
Mentally
unwell. No one's challenging her because she's young. And also people are saying, oh, she doesn't. There's been a real weird like, oh, she doesn't. She looks much younger than 16. Like weirdly kind of, I don't know, but judging her appearance that she doesn't look the right 16 when, like, the subtext of it being the 16-year-old they're thinking about is, like, some kind of sexy teen.
Ugh.
It's just gross. I've seen some really gross stuff written about her. But it also, I feel like, we see it in everyday life. Toby Morris did an amazing side-eye about, there's also some more research that suggests men don't like to do environmentally friendly things because they see it as eroding their masculinity questioning their heterosexuality. If I recycle this or if I use this reusable bag at the supermarket, I'll be less of a man.
So we need some Swan Dry supermarket bags.
Yes.
Stat.
Or some supermarket bags with Rugby World Cup designs on them.
I just don't want to believe that people are that fragile. That's insane.
I think they really don't.
Oh, I can't use that bag. It's flowery. It's the fucking supermarket.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Put your cans in it and move on.
But I think it's, you know, the men don't like to have bags, right? That's why, because they got pockets. They insisted on the pockets. They won the pockets.
Yeah.
And they don't like bags. So if the supermarket gave them a bag to carry just for between there and the car, that's okay. But if they've actually, if they're owning a bag, that's just a bit feminine. I constantly notice this, even before I read this, and I see men coming out of my supermarket all the time with their arms laden with stuff and no bag. Like, there's a guy, I saw him this week, he had his sweatshirt out, you know, maybe you'd been out picking blueberries or something, and but it had had some butter and some bread and milk that was hanging off his hand, and just because he forgot, well, he didn't own a bag, he didn't take a bag, and he wasn't going to buy another bag because that's admitting defeat, so he's just carrying loose
items.
I've
done that before.
In the sweatshirt.
Right. Because I have too many bags.
Yeah.
I just have too many. I was like, I cannot buy another bag. And all the 20-cent paper ones were gone. I was like, right, this is my life now. Just.
So my hot tip for that is that every time I forgot to take my bags out of the boot and found myself in the supermarket going, oh, fuck, I forgot my bags, I would make myself leave the supermarket and go to the car and get one of, you know, leave my trolley with somebody, you know, can you move? And it doesn't matter if anybody takes anything out of your trolley because you don't own it yet anyway.
That's true.
And I would make myself do the walk of shame to the car and come back with the bag. And it was so humiliating that I have retrained my brain.
Well, that's smart.
That's really, really
I never
smart.
Keep them in my car. So maybe I should do the drive all the way home of shame to get the bag and come back to my full supermarket trolley.
You'd only do it once.
I would only do it once.
You have to offset the drive, of course.
Oh, no. Oh, it's fraught.
It's very fraught. But, yeah, it's quite funny, Ella, if you think about a lot of the industries and things that have fucked up the planet have been led by men, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a good chunk of them,
a
yes.
A good chunk of it.
Use good a chunk of industrial bag. Pollution.
It's your fault.
The funny thing is, I'm okay with the idea of an affinity for Mother Earth, Papatūānuku, whatever, being a feminine relationship. I just don't get why guys can't have that relationship, is all, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with seeing her that way and then helping. You know, just jumping on board with the whole protecting.
It's kind of a shame they can't tap into their kind of patriarchal, paternal, patronising, condescending, I'll take care of the planet, look at me with my bags and my recycling.
Think of it as chivalry.
Yes. Yeah.
Think of her as just a weak little girl, frail damsel in distress that needs a big muscular man.
I can fix this.
To carry the shopping and the multiple flowery Trelease Cooper shopping bags.
Oh my God.
She needs you.
But is Mother Earth hot, Leonie?
Good, pertinent question.
She's hotter than she should be by 2 degrees.
Oh, dear. It's good to laugh, isn't it?
We're all going to sink into the ocean.
On that note, actually, our very last On the Rag episode for this season of our web series, we are hoping to do something about climate change and a feminist perspective on climate change, or just how women are feeling about it.
Yeah.
If you have any particular concerns or things you would like us to talk about, or people you'd like us to talk to, places you'd like us to go, can you please send me an email at alex@thespinoff.co.nz? We're really keen to really give it a good crack for our big finale where we hope to save the world
whole
in
world
22 minutes.
Immediately.
We're talking to Greta Thunberg's people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's not gonna be on it.
Oh dear. But yes, that would be really appreciated. You know, we wanna give you what you wanna see.
Yeah.
That's what we've always wanted to do.
Oh, do you want to talk about Alan Jones? No, I have actively avoided this.
No,
this
I put it on the list just as another example of an old man who's a bit frightened of younger, smarter women. And all women are younger and smarter than Alan Jones. So it's not that newsworthy,
but it's
really.
Tough, yeah.
But I did like the part of the story that I did like was the pushback that capitalism does when people go too far at a kind of tipping point in social history. So Alan Jones did that horrible thing about wanting to Scott Morrison to put a sock down our Prime Minister's throat, which was violent and disgusting and horrible. But the thing that was really cool, I guess, is that so many of the people who advertise on his radio show pulled their advertising.
Wow.
Capitalism doing something that it doesn't always do, which is to make a stand against misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the cool part of the story. Meanwhile, Alan Jones is still on the radio, but hey ho.
And the planet.
Yeah.
See, I thought when I just saw these headlines, I thought it was Alex Jones. You know, that InfoWars guy.
Oh.
Why is he always just like an A Jones?
Bob Jones.
Bob Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's like a statistical probability thing. There's just a lot of Joneses in the world, but I don't know.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
I don't want
to. It could almost be a new segment. Jeepers creepers.
Yeah, the Jones boys. We should,
got better things to do.
Jonesing. Leonie, do you want to talk about an update at Ihimatau? It seems like there was a big police reduction kind of halfway through the month.
So the police presence has reduced, and then the vigilance of the land protectors has been reduced from a red to sort of like an orange. So they don't do a night shift anymore. They're not accepting any more campers out there to give the whenua a bit of time to rejuvenate because it's been very muddy and a lot of people come in and go in, and so the ground has gotten a little bit messed up. But there's still people out there all the time, and there's still really interesting events going on and speakers, so it's still really great to get out there and show your support. And in return for that support, you get to learn lots of really cool things and talk to really interesting people. But yes, they're still there. For now, there's not really any movement on anything that's going on. There's a lot of chat from super sleuth Duncan Garner that Tainui have bought the land. He might be right. We don't know. I think maybe he's got a friend in Fletcher's who's telling him stuff like this, which is why he's confident enough to announce it to the world.
Mm.
As far as Seoul goes and mana whenua go, they have not been told that this is 100% happening. So until it comes from them, it's not true, you know?
Yeah.
But God, Garner's a big old dick about it. Like,
is he?
The prediction might be true, might not be true, but his framing of it was just this really, like, just still didn't understand what the occupation was about.
Right.
Thought that it had to do with money, thought that mana whenua want the land for themselves, which of course they don't. They're trying to protect it and share it at the same time. And it was just so stupid, and I felt bad. Like, I don't want to talk about some of his kids publicly, but he has Māori daughters, and I know that they're land protectors out at Ihumatau. So listening to your dad just come out with
that.
This ignorant rubbish in like mainstream media must be heartbreaking for them.
Yeah. It must be also really difficult. Oh, my heart breaks. For for Pākehā men, Pākehā, to shift that paradigm of it's about money, it's about land, it's about a commodity, as opposed to being about whenua that has its own spirit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is. But again, he was married to a Māori woman. He has Māori children. The idea that he still doesn't understand those concepts is just totally amazing to me. But yeah, so he is talking about it as like an attack on private property.
Right.
Right.
So that basically it could happen to any of us that, like, some mob might just come and decide that they want
so
our
much.
House and that they're just going to dig their heels in. And it's like, and then he said something like, the facts were very
thin on the ground or something. It's like, you know, there's a lot of information out there about the various environment court cases, the history of the land. Sol have been talking about it for a very long time and are happy to educate anyone that wants to go out and have a walk around, and they talk about their ancestor and when they came to the Manukau. And it's just like, there's so much information, Duncan Garner, just because you didn't read any of it. You know, that's not the same thing. Just because you can't read doesn't mean it's not there.
Oh, dear. I think there's also, in the new Loading Docks season, I think there's a short documentary about Pania Newton, which looks amazing. I haven't watched it yet, but there's a really good lineup of stuff there.
Cool.
I think maybe Duncan's worried that they're going to, like, invade his man cave.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the spread of that man cave, and he's very proud of that.
No one wants that man cave. It's the most depressing room I have ever seen.
Oh, bless.
Oh, dear. Also this month, it was quite a very, very dark story came out of the new season of Married at First Sight, which hasn't actually even started on TV yet. It starts this Sunday. It basically came out that one of the contestants, or one of the grooms, Chris Mansfield, had an outstanding charge of domestic violence in the US from 2009, and that he had skipped bail and seemingly left the country, and had come to New Zealand and had been married, not legally, but still married and put up with a stranger. And they had to edit, they're editing him out of the show probably as we speak.
Yeah.
It's a pretty extraordinary story. Like, it's shocking that it happened, but I also kind of empathise with, like, they couldn't have... He lied.
Yes.
He lied.
Yeah,
yes,
and there's no way of checking someone's criminal record in another country,
no,
right?
No, because of privacy reasons. So basically you are asking people to do this, the equivalent that you do when you fly into a country, do you have any criminal records? Who answers yes to that?
Yeah.
So he said no. So they didn't know. I think what this story says to me is the disconnect between... We understand that... 1 in 4 women in New Zealand experience sexual harassment or assault. We understand that number, but we never seem to think about that means that some number of men are guilty of that. And we just kind of assume that this is a thing that happens to women, but men don't do it. So we don't, I mean, you can't extrapolate and say 1 in 4 men is an assaulter.
Yeah.
Because some of them might be very fucking busy. So, and guilty of multiple harassment and assault incidents. But we kind of forget that every time you look at a room of men, a portion of them are perpetrators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So that's something that when it comes to doing programs like this, they're just going to have to bear in mind, front of mind. Yeah.
It was also kind of interesting, I think, when there was the first sort of round of reporting of it, it was sort of like domestic violence claims, blah, blah, blah. But what really, I think, hit home was when the woman spoke out who it happened to and said, you know, I was strangled. You know, this is like incredibly serious, incredibly violent behaviour. And it just goes to show, like, also how kind of insipid that can be, and that he can make his way onto a reality show. Yeah. They have, you know, I'm not going to say that they have the most, I don't know what their testing methods are, but they say they have psychological testing, they have as much background checks as you can do. And also, we talked about this on the Real Pod, this guy was also a brand ambassador for Heineken.
Right.
So there was a sense of kind of, I don't know, there was a,
he
a
has
safety
some
net
standing
around him, which made you think, you know, like, oh, well, a bad guy wouldn't be a public figure in that regard and be like representing alcohol
wouldn't
brand.
Manipulate people into liking him.
Exactly.
It's probably worth also saying that he was cut from the program. He's now been expunged from it, like he was never there. Mm. But he was cut from the program because before this information came to light, because of aggressive behaviour.
Volatile behaviour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then they found out about his decade-old history.
Yeah.
So his...
It looks like a dog and barks like a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't hide it forever.
It is interesting to think, you know, had those allegations not come out, or sorry, had that charge not come out, that how that would have played out in the show.
It is fascinating.
This is the kind of guilty thing I have to reconcile with as a reality TV fan of, like, I'm sure that would have been a Sunday night cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Of like, because those dinner parties or when there's those explosive moments, that's kind of why these shows exist. And when you really have to confront the fact that that could be based on a history of violent behaviour or aggression. Oh.
Yeah, how did it manifest itself in this environment?
Exactly.
And what did it look like?
And there's also, you know, the poor woman that he got married off to who was just taking a plunge at love and
poor
reality
lady.
TV and taking a huge risk and also...
I hope they're looking after her sufficiently.
Totally. She was also just getting ready to be on telly, you know, and that whole thing just gets taken away from you, as well as, like, probably what could have been considered a safety risk to her being shacked up with this man who she had no idea who he really was. It's like it was almost like borderline a kind of an unreal horror story.
It's also almost like it's a horrible idea for a TV show.
I agree.
It's almost like you should stop marrying strangers. Like,
you should stop marrying strangers off.
Yeah, stop forcing people into intimacy with people they don't know. I don't think it's giving us the right messages.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got, I don't think. Also, when you compare it with the last Australian season, Married at First Sight, which was just so oozingly toxic, and like there was violence in that as well. There was bullying, there was affairs, and it just tipped over an edge. But you're like, oh no, this isn't what people want to watch.
No. Well, also because they definitely hadn't chosen the contestants because they thought they were good people that they wanted to help find love. They chose them to do all of those things on television.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a disingenuous experiment.
Yes,
totally.
That needs to
end. What they should do is like, does findsomeone.co.nz still exist? Or one of those like classic online dating services? And do it like via that. Maybe just don't even put it on TV. Yeah, interesting to think about. Speaking of aggressive men.
On the television.
Marco Pierre-White has said this month that women are too emotional to be chefs.
Yeah.
This is a man who I have seen lose his fucking mind every single time he guest judges like MasterChef and freaks out. Those things.
It's the stupidest thing. But exactly. I don't know if you guys have worked in hospo, but I worked in hospo for about 10 years. And my experience and other women I worked with is that, yes, there were a lot of tearful 5 minute breaks that needed to be taken regularly. This is true. But what I saw in a lot of the male staff and the chefs was what he's obviously construed as being able to absorb pressure better, which is bottling everything up and then having a Hulk rage meltdown where you throw shit at the other staff and you swear and yell. Or the quiet ones just end up with horrible addiction issues.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like this guy's been in this industry a long time. Imagine being that blind to the way that like different people are processing that high stress environment. I would take a few tears once a month.
Yes.
Or every couple of weeks even in my case. Over that.
Which is so unhealthy. It's such
a
microcosm of how the whole world works, isn't it?
Yeah.
That women tend to have, on a cyclical basis, sensitive and emotional moments that are generally inward looking rather than thrashing outwardly, whereas men don't feel stuff and don't feel stuff and refuse to feel stuff and then explode with a hot pan and a knife in their hands. I also liked it that he said that women weren't strong enough to carry heavy pans. Fuck you.
That is such a ridiculous thing for a chef to say. Like, they're not out here cooking with 80 kg pans.
No, it's not. They're not
women
cooking
chefs
for...
spend all their day lugging shit around as well. They are cut.
Yeah.
That's a great quote. Look at the size of some of the pans you're carrying. Can you imagine you're a lady in the kitchen saying, will you carry that pan for me?
I'll show you where I'll put that pan, Marco.
And also, imagine asking someone for help. Gross.
But the responses have been great. Like Asma Khan, who has an Indian restaurant in London that has an all-female kitchen, said, like a three-day-old fish, these comments reek of patriarchy. There's no room in the kitchen for rotting fish or chefs with these attitudes.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Marco.
Oh dear. He even cuts onions angrily. I've seen some mad knife work from that man before. Oh, dear.
Yeah. No.
Oh, good for the creepy doctor. I've just seen the creepy doctor and the... I also haven't almost purposefully read about this because it makes me feel sick.
Yeah, so there was a doctor in Nelson.
Nelson doctor.
Who was recording his patients getting undressed. And there was a couple of instances of him recording a couple of friends in his home.
Getting what?
Just in the bathroom. And he has been suspended for 1 year from medical practice, but he has not lost his license.
What?
Imagine.
Was there any reason that he was recording? Was he looking for signs of Parkinson's disease? Private motor skills moments?
The defence was completely non-existent. It was like, yes, I have done this for the purpose of looking at women undress, but there were no children in any of the images, so that makes me a good guy.
What?
Basically, that was the defence. I don't know if that's why they let him keep his medical license. Yes.
Yeah. Not a paedophile.
Pay right.
Well done.
But yeah, so if you're in the Nelson area, or I mean, maybe he'll move because I don't think many people in the Nelson area will want to have him as a doctor after this, but his name is Samuel John Simpson Wilson, which is too many names.
Far too many names.
And they're all very generic names, so it is actually going to be quite hard to identify him as the pervy doctor. But I urge you to look up the news article so you can see his face and make sure you don't ever have to have him as your doctor.
And if he turns up at a medical centre near you, just say that you're suddenly feeling a hell of a lot better.
Yeah. Turn around. Ooh, get out of there.
This fractured leg in 10 places is just, I'm fine now.
It's like, what do you have to do to be...
Exactly.
Because doctors are one of the... They're the people that we rely on so much and trust. There's so much trust and intimacy with a doctor, right? You would think that the threshold would be somewhat lower in terms of, nah, that'll do, mate. Off you go.
And I mean, there's a lot of doctors, right? Like, you could just get rid of him.
Yes.
And I'm sure there'd be someone else who'd
it's
be willing
It's not Kiwi
to...
build, is it? It's like, there's another doctor. Surely we're not that short of doctors.
Shall we, on a lighter note, talk about what we've been watching and reading this month? Recommendations. What
have you got? I have been reading. If anybody else is in the space where their brain is a little fragile and maybe they're interested in reading about grief but not actually reading about grief, because I found some books on grief and they just made me really fucking sad.
Oh, yeah.
Miserable and dark. But two novels that I've read in the last week while I was on holiday. One of them is Love and Fame, Susie Boyd. And it is fabulous and beautifully written. Susie Boyd, I hate placing people in the world by who their male relatives are, but she... is the daughter of Lucian Freud, the artist, and the great-granddaughter of Sigmund Freud. And I think it's relevant because the lead character, the protagonist in the novel, is the daughter of a really famous actor. So the book is about grief, and it's funny and sweet and smart and beautifully written. And the other one is by Sarah Winman. Both of these are English writers. The other is When God Was a Rabbit, which was published in 2011, but I'd never heard of it. And it's just beautiful. I don't know how to describe it. It's a story that starts when a girl is five and finishes when she's in her early adulthood. And again, it's about death and losing people and finding people. And it's just beautifully written. Mm. I'll stop talking. When God Was a Rabbit by Sarah Winman and Love and Fame, Susie Boyd. Brilliant. Can't recommend them highly enough.
Put it on the list.
Book club. What about you, Leonie?
I, to be honest, haven't been reading anything of late, although speaking of Freud's, my partner has been reading to me Freud's Interpretation of Dreams.
Just stop it now. Stop it now. Reading. Your partner's reading to you.
Yeah, we
this is the most beautiful thing.
I love that.
We read to each other.
Oh, my God. I love that.
No, the problem is I think I have like a Pavlovian response from childhood to fall asleep almost immediately.
When somebody's reading you.
When someone's reading.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he has been reading Interpretation of Dreams to me and I've been falling asleep immediately.
Does he notice that you're asleep?
No, I don't know. Oh, I
Does he
know.
Just keep reading?
I'm asleep. Mm, yeah.
But when he picks it up the next day, do you feel like you've missed a bit?
Yes. He's like, where did we get to before you fell asleep? And I'm like, the beginning of the book, probably. No, but we take turns reading to each other. And
oh, I love you both.
That is so it's
nice.
Lovely.
It's nice to fall asleep to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can you remember anything
every
about
night?
The book?
No.
You know the title, at least.
I know the title and who it's by. But I have been watching, I won't recommend it sort of in terms of like a good feminist watch, but I've been watching this YouTube weekly series called PAQ, P-A-Q. It's a men's fashion show run, hosted by these four young men from London. There's like sort of two black guys, a Middle Eastern guy and a young Yorkshire boy who looks like a baby Mick Jagger. They're all very, very nice. But what I like about it, so they have these like fashion challenges and they go thrifting or they borrow like fancy high-end clothes and they have to put outfits together. But it's been this really amazing sort of education in like non-toxic Gen Z boys.
Right.
So it's a show of four boys. And so you'd think that that would be like super mask. But they're actually really, like, interested in exploring, like, women's clothing for men, and they do styling challenges with women, and the women are all different shapes and sizes, and, like, it's just, like, a super diverse, like, group of people in their community from, like, all over London and all over Europe. And, like, it's funny, which is why I like watching it, and I like outfits. I like watching people put outfits together. But I was just sort of like, if you have teenagers and this is what they're watching... Mm. Yay.
Yeah.
Fucking yay.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, it's not, they had like a skirt challenge and it wasn't about like dressing up in drag. It was like, skirts are awesome. I don't see why only women get to wear them. Mm. Let's make skirts look
and
really great
on
guys.
Totally.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
We makeup sometimes and I like it.
Love that. Yeah. On that note of stuff that teenagers could watch, I watch Booksmart.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Oh my God, Booksmart is so good. I think it was probably less than 5 minutes and I was weeping just out of like recognition and happiness of like, it's just these two high school girls who like never quite fit in their very final, maybe even week or last days of high school, realizing it's like Superbad. It's Superbad, but women basically.
Yeah.
And there's also one of them's queer and it's just like, if I compare that to the kind of high school girl movie that was when I was starting third form, which was Mean Girls, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And the more you watch it is actually like very much a satire. But when I watched it as a teenager, I was like, I want to be Regina George. Like I didn't get the point of that movie. I was like, I want to be a plastic. Whereas you watch something like Booksmart and I'm like, I don't know how old I am, 15 years since then. It's just like phenomenal, the leap forward in like the texturing of the characters of these texturing.
Yes.
Texturizing. The texture of these young women and their hopes and dreams, but also like flaws and just frankness. And it's just so funny.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's like I never realized that like when I was a teenage girl, you don't really see other teenage girls being funny. They're always like
totally.
There to be looked at or perfected or look a certain way. And God, I just
love
I saw it with one of my best friends from high school and I was just like, I was beside myself.
I love it.
With tears of like laughter. But also, yeah. Oh.
Which reminds me, I also saw on the plane Late Night with Emma Thompson and Mindy Kaling.
Oh, yeah.
And it's superb. It's absolutely superb. And again, it's, you know, female driven, obviously. And it's about a woman who, Emma Thompson, is a late night talk show host who, is accused of, with good reason, of not liking women. Like, you know, there's a writer's room with only men in it and she's never met them and she never has female guests on or else they're, And Mindy Kaling comes along and challenges all of that and there are some really great discussions about quotas and whether you actually do need a... Why can't you just have a whole lot of white men in a room writing jokes for a lady? Why would that be wrong? Yeah. Ooh, you're the token woman of colour and it's your fault that men like us are losing our right. place in the world. And yeah, so there's some really good discussions in it and it's also really fucking funny and Emma Thompson is amazing.
I love Emma Thompson.
Yeah, she's just superb. And I don't know, I noticed the shoes a lot. She wore some really amazing shoes.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Lots of flats, lots of wedges, some crazy mules.
And yeah. Kayleen is really hot for shoes. She, I would say that's probably her influence probably. On the wardrobe department.
Yeah, well, she didn't do too badly in the wardrobe department on the shoes either. Yeah. It was great. She's fabulous.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, I want her to be my friend.
Late night.
Actually, it just reminded me as well, I have also been watching season 3 of GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah.
It's a show that just never gets bad, it just continues to get better. But there was a moment on there, so our colleague Josie Adams wrote this really good piece recently about a naked dinner that she went to that didn't necessarily go as she'd hoped, and I urge you to go to the spin-off and find that piece and read it. But there's a line that Josie said about... You know, she won't find nudity revolutionary until she sees someone playing it for laughs. Mm. And there's a scene in GLOW where the main character, Alison Brie's character, is trying to make someone laugh. So she turns around, she puts on like a full noise, like Vegas feather headdress, like showgirl headdress, and then takes her top off and just does this like ridiculous dance where she's like waving her boobs in her friend's face, trying to make her laugh. And then she gets snapped or someone. Like someone walks in, but it is so fucking funny, and it was the absolute personification of using nudity for laughs that our workmate had written about, like, you know, the flaws that you want to see, and like nudity becomes sort of normalized when it's not there just for men to look at. Yeah. And I was like, that was such a great example of it.
Oh my God, that's such a good point.
Yeah, yeah. It's very funny.
Also, in
boobs
so
look
many...
very funny when you just chuck them around.
You can get them to swing in concentric circles if you get the right lane on.
There's actually a very funny boob bit in It Chapter 2.
Oh,
Against All Odds, played for laughs, but is also by like a 6-foot demon woman. So I don't know if that's feminist or not, but maybe she's my Kia Queenie. I have one more book recommendation. I've nearly got to the end of Trick Mirror, a collection of essays about self-delusion by Gia Tolentino, and it's one of the fucking most amazing. I've kept stopping and it's been like, ugh, it's so smart, and reading bits out to Joe, who doesn't really listen, but I'm going to get him to read it. It's like it's a series of essays. They're all kind of like, there's just intrinsic kind of feminist notions all the way through it. But the one that really resonated with me is one that actually got published kind of in full on The Guardian, which was about athletic wear, athleisure, and the kind of new aesthetic of well-being and perfection, and how that is like the ultimate extension of the patriarchy now, is that this type of outfit and these looks exist within like always having to sculpt your body, and it's leggings are expected to be worn by a certain type of body, and if you don't have that body you have to wear the leggings to get that body, and it's like this endless cycle, and it just freaked me out. I haven't explained it very well. But it's like amazing. It blew my mind, some of the things she comes up with.
I love Jolentino. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's so smart. I like how it's the intersection of like the patriarchy and capitalism, that now this idea of just like, well-being and fitness and all of that. None of them are bad on their own, but the expectation that now women have to do all of it, and it's just part of now our daily routine, that, you know, we do all these things, which are still working towards self-perfection and assuming that we are wrong.
Being our optimal self.
Being our optimal self.
Self-optimization.
Self-optimization. That's the thing. And it just...
Yeah.
Athleisure wear is oppression.
I read that article and just felt incredibly grateful to be 58 and I don't have to be part of that. Mm. I mean, maybe if I lived in California, I would, but I just go, no, see, it's not aimed at me. Nobody's asking me to join in this, and I just feel so relieved because I read that and I felt fucking tired.
Yeah. And to be clear, wear all the leggings you want.
That sure.
It's not the point here. No.
It's very comfortable to nap in.
I'm wearing stretch pants right now.
Yeah. It's all about what you want.
Yeah.
Because it's on the rag.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just it did make me sort of think about feelings I've had in the past where I'm like, I want to go for a walk, but to go for a walk means wearing really tight leggings and a tight top, and I don't feel tight enough.
Just get track pants,
to wear
yo.
Those things.
Live your life in track pants.
Exactly. I wear my Barker's trackies. Yes. I love my Barker's trackies so
classic.
Much.
It's a classic piece.
But I was like, that's kind of an interesting feedback loop.
Yes.
Of like,
yes,
there's a reason why fitness, like, it's tight. It's
I can't exercise because I don't look right in my exercise wear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will never look right in my exercise wear because I can't exercise. And I have to eat this kind of food and I have to eat it really fast so that I can go back and earn enough money so that I can afford to eat this kind of food and eat it really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, and she talked about like Michelle, bar class.
I'm so depressed now.
No, just do what I do and buy yourself a Rose's lasagna and wear your warehouse track pants. Yeah. That's fuck it. Fuck it.
Love lasagna.
One day you'll be 58 and you, they won't be, they nobody's trying to make you do this anymore because you're invisible.
Oh, no.
Oh, Blake.
What about Kia ora Queenie of the Month?
Kia ora Queenies.
Let's get the spirits back high.
I made a reference earlier in the episode about my Kia ora Queenie. So last night I went to an event which was the launch of an album called Waiata Anthems. And it is a compilation of songs by New Zealand artists. Very famous New Zealand artists like Beck Runga and 660 and Stan Walker. And basically they've taken their biggest hit song and they've re-recorded it in Te Reo Māori. So it's a release for Te Wiki o Te Reo, which is next week. But the person who produced it and came up with the concept is my Kia ora Queenie, and it's Hinewehi Mohi. And so she's a wonderful singer-musician that I'm sure lots of you have heard of. She also runs the Rokatauri Music Therapy Trust, which does amazing work. But she is the singer who 20 years ago stood up at the World Cup quarterfinal in Twickenham and sang the national anthem in Te Reo Māori and only Te Reo Māori. She didn't sing it in English. She thought she was just sharing Te Reo Māori with the world. She did it very innocently. And she got home to a world of shit from the likes of Paul Holmes and other commentators who demanded to know why she had only sung in Te Reo. And, of course, now we sing it bilingually at every single sports match, and that's because of her. And she's been sort of like a tireless Te Reo campaigner her whole life, and especially since then. So that album is to mark the 20th anniversary of her standing up and singing the national anthem in Te Reo. And so she's my Kia ora Queenie for the month because she's so awesome. Yes. And buy the album or listen to the album, stream the album, Waiata Anthems. It's really beautiful. You haven't lived until you've heard Beck Runga sing Sway in Te Reo Māori.
Whoa.
I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
Yeah. So I think that comes out tomorrow.
What's the album
tomorrow?
Called?
That's meaningless to you.
What is the album?
It's called Waiata Anthems.
Thank you.
Out September 6th.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Amazing. Great. Hairs on my arms are going up.
Mm. I'm going to bring it down to an Australian economist now.
Oh,
it's not quite as much fun. But Dr. Julie Smith is an Australian economist who is trying to get breast milk counted in gross domestic product because it's a symbol, it's symbolic of how all the stuff that women produce and the caring that we do is not counted as part of our economy, and women are invisible so often in GDP. And
wow.
So she's worked out that in Australia, 44 million litres of breast milk is produced each year, which is worth $3 billion Australian dollars.
How do you price that?
Because, well, you can, because in some countries, breast milk is commodified. Women sell it to hospitals for babies who are born prematurely.
Right.
So there's a price in America, $100 a litre. Women also give it away on the internet, give breast milk away a lot. But so it can be commodified. So you work out how many babies are being breastfed for how long and how many people are feeding them. And so she's in. Her guess is that in New Zealand, people with breasts produce 11 million litres of breast milk, which is $1.1 billion worth of contribution to the GDP.
Wow.
So I just love that. And, you know, she's really serious about it. She's a serious economist who's going, no, hang on, fuck you. If you're going to measure our well-being and wealth using GDP, start counting the stuff that women produce. And you can commodify formula. So why can't you put a price on, why can't you value breast milk?
Very cool.
So she's my kia ora queenie. I know, it's just a mind-shifting way of thinking about what we do.
Wow. I love it. I love it.
What else can we sell? I'm in the market. You want some spit? mine is also another in a completely different field. I'd just like to give a big shout out to Shannon Ryan on Celebrity Treasure Island because she is out there, she's looking amazing with full hairy pits. And at first I was like, well, they've been on the island for ages. Maybe it's just grown out. But they've only been on the island for like 3 days. So she arrived to the show with full hairy pits. And as someone who's growing out my pits right now, I was like, this is amazing. This is a moment.
Yeah.
And I just want to say shout out Shannon Ryan. I think she's also leading with style and charisma and courage on the island. And I really hope that she wins.
Oh, that's great.
But it's just so cool. Like, she keeps going, yeah, and she's just got... And at first you're kind of like, whoa, it's still a new
Yeah, a new site. Yeah.
And she just doesn't care. So big shout out. What a lineup. My goodness. I think we're at the end of the podcast, though.
Okay.
Well, thanks for sticking around all the way to the end. Thank you very much again to the Women's Bookshop for making this podcast possible.
Yes.
We love you.
Thank you, Women's very Bookshop. Very much.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Tina.
Our wonderful producer who listens to all of this every single month.
I think she drifts off now and then, don't you?
I don't know. She thinks that happy. get in touch with us on our On The Rag Facebook page. Email me your climate change ideas and we'll see you next month.
Yes.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.